Hi, this is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm in the US this week, currently at Pavilion Data with Walt and Jeff. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hi, Chris.
Who wants to go first and tell your audience about themselves and what you do for the company?
My name is Walter Hinton, and I'm responsible for corporate and product marketing. Been with the company for just about 3 months.
And I'm Jeff Sosa. I cover product management. I've been at the company almost 3 years now.
And I think both of you got big storage backgrounds.
We do. We're old. But Jeff and I actually worked together at Virden Systems and then Western Digital. Jeff was early with Fusion.io as well.
Yeah, I was at Fusion.io prior to Virident, and then prior to that, I was at several other enterprise storage companies like NetApp, and I was at Data Domain as well.
Brocade?
And I was at Brocade before that. That was sort of my introduction into the storage world.
This is an embarrassing list, because I can't say I've worked for any vendor. I've always been on the customer side, so yeah. I haven't got anywhere near an impressive CV.
Well, I was storage tech, McData, a few startups in Boulder, Colorado, and in Virident, and now I still live in Boulder, but I come to San Jose every other week.
And you know, Boulder is lovely now. Oh, it's grown massively.
It's
incredible. Absolutely amazing. I've been for a few of these Solid Fire events they've had out there and stayed at the St. Julian Hotel.
Oh, yes.
Really nice.
They did you right.
They did, yeah. It was really, really good. But I loved Boulder when I went there 20 years ago. I think we were talking earlier and I was saying... Yeah. I was out there for some work, and I didn't recognize it because it's grown so much, but yeah, the one place in the US I would live, given the choice. There we go. Right, so we'll move on. We're here, I guess we're just having a chat about architectures and design, and we've been talking about your platform and how it's different to what other people have perhaps been doing in the industry, yet at the same time it isn't in some respects, because when we look at the technology, we can see lots of comparisons to how the technology for SANS came around. And I think people can't see this because we haven't got the slide. Maybe we can share this if we if we add it to the notes on the actual podcast. But the architectures that we're seeing in the market are sort of dragging us back a little bit towards the SAN days. Would that be a fair comparison to make?
For sure. And some of it's based upon changes at a layer well above server and storage. If you would have started a company, say in the past 5 years, that's a data intensive company, you're likely to have taken a different approach than what I call the industrial military complex of Oracle and Microsoft and VMware. You would pick modern applications that are basically, their business model is, I offer the database free, I charge you support, and I provide consulting services. MongoDB is a $1 billion company based on that model. We see a variety of these different parallel modern database architectures that offer you massive scalability and a way to get out of that industrial military complex and the stranglehold that you have, that IT is in because of those traditional software models. That said, what goes along with it is a completely different architecture for server and storage. And the way that sort of the first wave of this happened, enabled by NVMe storage, was I deploy servers and I put NVMe drives inside. And I shard my database. I do my database design around resiliency and high availability and blast radius and everything else so that I just add more and more servers and I scale out in a parallel fashion. That was the first wave. The problem with that is, just like you say, Chris, back when we watched the original days of storage area networks, I was doing hard drives inside servers. And then I moved the hard drives into JBOD, and I did what today we call software-defined storage, where I put the volume manager on the servers. And then we got to a point where we had storage arrays that had all the data management functions that you would need, and you could consolidate, and you get dramatically better utilization of storage resources, ease of manageability. But of course, you got there kicking and screaming all the way through the politics of organizations.
So there was definitely the politics side of it, and if you look at, say, how the network team and the storage team would have a big argument about whose network we were going to run across, that was definitely the case. Fiber Channel was definitely the preferred choice if you were in a big enterprise. The network guys usually wouldn't run that, but if they did, it usually, from my experience, wasn't very well run, which was always quite interesting. But we seem to be moving away from that. And Jeff, from your perspective, the technology of things like NVMe, Rocky, NVMe/TCP, or whatever it's going to be officially called, all of that is, to a certain degree, taking away that that argument, really.
Yeah, and you know, the customers that Walt talked about, where they're building these more scale-out architectures with clustered data managers, clustered databases, they've used Ethernet exclusively up till now. And you can run low-latency storage protocols over Ethernet now as well very easily using either RDMA or TCP. And so a lot of this choice of which network I'm going to deploy to either A, share storage, or pass my application traffic isn't a big thing anymore, and you're not going to need to deploy completely separate networks necessarily, especially with the bandwidth you can get today on the Ethernet side. So we're seeing customers that start with this scale-out kind of architecture where they put the drives in the servers all connected by Ethernet, and now they could actually pool the storage over that same Ethernet with very low latency and all the data management features you would expect from the old traditional SANs that were connected to Fiber Channel. So
here's a philosophical question related to that then. Do you think there was a certain degree of, in the new world where we're talking about applications that might be open source, like, and you have a list in there, by the way, MongoDB, Cassandra, and so on. Do you think there was either they just didn't deploy SANs because they didn't have the money or they didn't want to spend the money? Or do you think there was a philosophical intent to avoid that technology because they saw that as old school enterprise? Which way do we think, is that a fair comparison or not?
I think there's one other key point, and that was just performance and latency too. They needed, so back when I was at Fusion.io and then Viridit, it was the precursor to NVMe, and really those were some of the first products that got deployed in this kind of architecture. And the thing they were looking for was lowest possible latency, let's put the data right next to the CPU.
Yeah.
And let's just scale that. So it was performance and agility combined, I think, that drove these architectures. And they also avoided the politics of maybe if they had to go work with the SAN team, they could just do this on their own.
Yeah.
And that's how this got going and has grown so much over the last 10 years or so. Yeah.
When you look at as it's evolved, right, and we went from the Fusion.io and Virident PCIe with software stack that had to go with those devices, and you know, now we're at the point where we're looking at composable disaggregated architectures. We're talking about NVMe over fabrics. When you disaggregate and you put a box at the bottom of the rack, right, and it's got all the NVMe drives and you can access them through NVMe over fabrics, what does it need to have? Right, we've got some ideas, and you were part of this team. What were your thoughts?
So the key thing is, there's a couple things. One, if you're going to disaggregate, you need to be able to replace or improve the performance of all the NVMe drives or PCIe cards that were in all these hosts before
so
you disaggregate.
When you say disaggregate, then define what you mean by disaggregate, in case people don't really know what that means, because we use terms like that in the industry.
Right,
quite easily. And people might not entirely know what you mean by that.
Well, what's interesting about this architecture we keep talking about that has evolved, it's effectively hyperconverged, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's talking about hyperconverged more in the recent past, but I mean, this was hyperconverged from the beginning, much like you used to see in the HPC world in a lot of cases as well, where you put the storage media in each server to give it that locality next to the processor, you get the lowest latency, et cetera. So it was a hyper-converged model, but it came with all the disadvantages of direct attached storage in terms of utilization, manageability, et cetera. By disaggregating, what we're talking about is taking all that media, putting it in another appliance separate from all the compute. And so now you hear about, instead of hyper-converged, people are saying, okay, I want to scale compute and storage independently. And this is a key ingredient to doing that. Get the media away from the compute, actually, and disaggregate it in appliance.
And build a sand.
Build the
and basically build another sand.
Build the next generation of sand.
But without without the downsides, I mean, the other thing about these environments is that they don't use sands for various reasons. We talked about the politics, but one is the performance isn't good enough.
Yeah.
The latency isn't good enough. They're used to having, again, the media right next to the CPU. So you need to be able to, if you're going to provide shared storage, you cannot increase that latency, right? And so you got to be able to do that at scale for, say, a full rack, getting back to the requirements for disaggregation. And then you also have to have the data management features you would expect with shared storage, the resiliency, HA, things like snapshots, et cetera, the other things that make shared storage so compelling. So.
But going past that, how much more do we really need? And how much of that could be put into the application? So start at the very top of this conversation, talking about MongoDB and how you can spread the database across many nodes, and that effectively the application was doing that work. Mm-hmm. Is there a middle ground that says now we can consolidate physically into a single chassis, mm-hmm. but we can still allow Mongo to shard as much as it likes because that gives application level performance? Mm-hmm. And now, because of yes. that, we get a mixture of the best of both worlds. We get application performance, but we get the storage consolidation benefits.
Yeah. I think one thing people should realize is, yes, you are a lot of times distributing workload across all these servers for performance reasons, but you still get a lot of benefits of disaggregating the storage in terms of utilization, flexibility. If you have instant snapshots, you could then deploy a whole new instance of this scaled-out database on other compute nodes, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe do analytics there in parallel on something else. So the models work well together. There's benefits to the scale-out that still will exist because you want to still scale compute. You might want to scale network, et cetera, by doing the scale-out with the database. But having the storage centralized just gives you a lot more flexibility.
Absolutely. One thing, though, that we should probably be, you know, real about with our technology, we're about performance, mm-hmm. right? So I've had some analysts, Jeff and I were on a call with one of the respected analyst groups, and the guy says, well, you're not going to get anywhere if you don't have dedupe. Well, wait, if our purpose is performance, everything that's overhead associated with doing data reduction isn't really in our focus, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, you want to take a snapshot, create a clone, spin that off to something that can deduplicate, mm-hmm. but not our game.
Yeah, right now our customers don't want to take a latency hit. You know, that's the whole thing. We're replacing, think about it, the fastest storage that exists, which is PCIe connected flash. Yep. We are replacing that for racks of servers from a single centralized appliance. That's got to be the game we're focused on, and these other things like data reduction are just not as critical.
Yeah.
I think there's an absolute trade-off there, that you have to decide whether that's something you want to actually include in the design or you don't. And if you're costing something out, you have to build that into the cost.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, you look at traditional SAN and you look at traditional storage purchasing, the purchasing model was you go to the vendor and the vendor gives you a solution and they'll price it up, say, well, modern day now, per gigabyte, per terabyte. And they'll use things like data reduction as a way of getting that price down. Right. And that's been the way that they got all flash to be so attractive in this market, was to
really
use those
point.
Data reduction, and I'm using air quotes for anybody who can't see you. Obviously, most people can't. Air quotes to say, you know, that data reduction stuff to get the price down. Now, you've taken a different route. You've taken the route of not actually charging for the media specifically, but charging for the actual infrastructure and then allow people to bring that media. Why not talk about that for a second? Who wants to?
It's actually it's the perfect timing for Pavilion to enter this market. And if we were a year ahead of ourselves and had, you know, $20, $30 million worth of paying customers who bought media from us, we couldn't have this disruptive business model. But because we're starting out right when we are, and our customers are used to, you know, large hyperscalers, they buy direct from the SSD maker. Mm-hmm. NVMe is the most expensive non-volatile media in the data center, period. So they're doing everything they can to not even have one tier of distribution between them and the drive maker. So by us being able to unbundle the media from the purchase of the platform, you have a really different business model. And we can do it because we're a startup. We'll just base our business model on the fact that our customers source their media from, you know, the big four drive makers. Now, there are huge benefits for this, right? You can then, inside our platform, have various media groups, various volumes that are associated with different types of workloads. You can buy those from different drive makers. You know, the place where we worked before, known for best read IOPS, best quality of service. But hey, if I want something that's maybe more targeted for ride operations, for endurance, I may choose a different vendor, or I may choose a different class of drive.
But and this market's changing really quickly, though, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So if you look at how fast things like we've moved on to QLC. QLC drives are coming out with huge capacities. Right. So if you're going to build a massive write-intensive analytics platform, sorry, read-intensive, mm-hmm. I should say, yeah. you would potentially be using QLC because that will give you massive scalability. Mm-hmm. But how do you go about making sure that what somebody puts in isn't their OCZ drive from some server they had about 10 years ago that isn't really going to be compatible? You can't just put anything in, can you?
That's true. I mean, we do qualify all the drives that we allow customers to put in, but we keep a pretty long list of qualified drives active at any given point. So at this point, we've qualified drives from pretty much all the big vendors. Micron, HGST, Western Digital, Samsung, Intel, et cetera, Toshiba. So, and you're right, there's a lot of diversity in the market now. When I first started working on NVMe products back at HGST 4 or 5 years ago, you know, there was one class of drive you could get that was NVMe. Now there's all kinds of variety you can, and method of selling allows customers to take advantage of that those changes in the market pretty much immediately. As long as we've done the qual, and right. like I said, we keep a pretty long list. We've probably got 20 different SKUs on the list that we've qualified already. And when a customer comes along and says, look, I'm really interested in this QLC drive that's 15 or 30 terabytes or what have you, we can qualify it pretty quickly.
And we're going to head there. I mean, if you think about it now, we've already got drives that are 30 terabytes.
Yeah, on the SAS and SATA side,
It's not going to take long for that to be an NVMe drive, and for that to then be an NVMe drive that's 64 or maybe 100 terabytes.
Yeah,
I mean, right. I dare to, you know, to think those how expensive they'll be. But
it's funny, if I go back 10 years ago when we were talking about these components and the capacities you could get, there came a point where I quit questioning whether something was too much capacity. I mean, I remember, you know, working on roadmaps and things when I was at some of these other vendors and thinking, oh, there's no way somebody's going to need that much capacity. And I was proven wrong a couple cycles. And so from now, hey, bring it on. Any kind of capacity they can produce, it will get used. And what we're finding is some of our initial biggest customers now are buying the most capacity I can cram into this system, which is a petabyte right now. And they're buying multiple boxes, right?
Okay. So I'm going to give you another parallel again that brings us back to the discussion we've just had. Mm-hmm. Think about when we had servers where we deployed our own storage and a DAS model. Mm-hmm. We could afford to put in like that, let's call it a gigabyte drive or a pair of gigabyte drives to boot, and maybe we had a 36 gig drive in for data. When we got to the stage of having multi-terabyte drives, that was quite difficult to justify putting in many drives into a server to guarantee data protection and all the other features. But putting that into a shared storage appliance wasn't a big deal because we're sharing it with everybody because we're abstracting it. Right. Are we back in that route as we get into the size of flash drives going into being 30, 40, 50 terabytes where you almost have to go back to the consolidated model because you couldn't actually distribute them across nodes in the same way?
I think that's definitely true, especially for, like you said, distribution, use across, utilizing it across multiple applications, et cetera. But the concern on the other side is then, okay, great, you've consolidated it, and you have things like RAID, right, to protect. Well, then what happens when you have to do a rebuild of something that size? So you also need an architecture that allows you to do very fast rebuilds.
Yeah.
And to be able to handle, you know, rebuilding, say, a 20 terabyte drive in an hour, right? That's kind of a design point that we use.
And I think, I'd say that's even more critical, because if you think about east-west traffic in an HCI model, rebuilding a 50 terabyte drive, that's a lot of traffic going across that east-west network. So in actual fact, putting that behind the box and having it going across an internal PCIe bus, or Fabric is probably much more efficient.
Yeah, and especially if you can gang up multiple controllers in parallel to do the rebuild, which is what we do in our product. We can swarm recover using a whole handful of controllers to get it done really fast, which, you know, obviously offloaded off the servers, the network, et cetera. So, yeah.
So this kind of brings us to a really interesting point, which is with the speed and low latency of NVMe, and with NVMe over fabrics, which is, you know, going to extend that for disaggregation, when you look at controller architectures and you look at storage architectures in general, well, all the big storage guys are coming into the space, and they've got their classic active-active controller. They have massive amounts of DRAM for caching, and hey, it works, right? And they can say, we're fully NVMe. Back end are drives, front end is fabrics, we're here, you know, we're crashing the party. But architecturally, if you step back and say, all right, let's design a box for NVMe. Let's design the next generation.
The front end and the back end.
The front end and the back end and the mid plane.
The middle part, yeah.
You end up with something that, I mean, it looks like a network switch, right? You've got redundant fabrics in the middle that are, you know, terabit, multi-terabit, and have nanosecond latencies. And you write some sort of supervisory operating system, and then you just get out of the way. And you let fabric stream in, you switch it across the back plane, you let it talk to drives on the back side, and throw in a whole bunch of non-volatile memory at the front end, or DRAM at the front end for caching. Well, don't do that. The drives are plenty fast. Mm-hmm. Just get out of the way. Cacheless writes. Why not do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's an architecture I've talked about before, in the sense that you end up with a lot of things like cache coherency you've got to do across multiple controllers and keeping that in sync. You're then scaling based on the amount of DRAM you've got, because if you're keeping all your metadata in DRAM, when you scale it, then that becomes your restriction.
Right.
So taking that out of the model is really useful, I think.
Yeah.
The question really comes as to how well you can still maintain the metadata across many nodes and allow you to be as flexible as you want about how you carve that back-end storage up. Now, you're in a position, Jeff, where you are today with the product. Obviously, your intention is to take that further. I'm not asking you to reveal any sources, but I guess the logical conclusion is that you can carve your pool of storage up into anything you want. That would be, if I was a customer, that's what I would be hoping to get.
Yeah, and you know, getting back to the metadata sharing and the fact that we don't cache, this really allows you to have this kind of scale-out architecture in a single system where you have a lot of controllers, because, you know, if each of them had to keep a cache consistent across every controller, you know, you start running into, you know, it gets complicated.
Coherency challenges.
And the only way you redo the internals of these systems, like you were saying, is to deploy a lot more controllers inside to be able to deliver all the performance. And so, again, not using caching helps us with this architecture. We also mirror some of the memory, and this is getting into some of our internals, but we mirror memory on our management controllers as well. So through the PCIe bus, we can see the memory of other cards, et cetera. So we do some tricks in there to make failovers very fast between the controllers, even though we're not, you know, keeping two caches consistent between the two of them necessarily. Everything's committed to disk. So, and then, yes, back onto the utilization of the media in the platform today. You know, what we see right now is customers having usually groups of workloads where they would want to leverage shared storage from a single platform, and allowing them to have zones of resources within the platform that they can segregate for different workloads. Maybe one rack is using one zone of resources out of the box, but over the same network, you're going to another rack to access a different zone of resources all within the same system. But then also being able to just completely share everything as a pool, and then have, you know, quality of service fencing around different workloads coming in, and then just making it one big pool of resources that you can access from a lot of different endpoints.
Okay. So as we start to wrap up, just one final question. How are you seeing this style of architecture, let's call it rack scale, should we call it rack scale? Is that a fair, fair definition? How are we seeing it being adopted? The very beginning, Walt, you said about the tax of the, what do you call them again?
The modern applications versus the industrial military complex. Yes.
As we see the technology being adopted, is it coming first in those areas, or are we seeing other areas being more appropriate for this sort of rack scale technology first?
The early adopters are cloud companies who have
cloud-like
architecture, who have looked at and seen and embraced hyperscale,
cloud web scale,
exactly,
right.
And then it's easy for people who have been in massively parallel compute to go, oh, hey, we've already been doing that. Now we're just going to do it with lower latencies. We're not going to try and use some sort of esoteric SAN to do the trick. The next places that it's happening is where time is money, and that's with hedge funds. So the financial services people are picking it up.
Right.
And then the other category, and I thought about this when I joined the company, this is killer for media and entertainment, whether it's in editing, pre-production, post-production, play to air. All of that is, you know, I've got much larger data sets. I've got 8K video streams, and I need to be able to accommodate it. So, so those are kind of the areas. I think there's a challenge in, you know, the big swath of where that industrial military complex lives, where, man, asking them to change what they've done for 20, 30 years is going to be harder.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of that is down to maybe operational practices, teams that have got built into their silos, storage teams that don't want to talk to the network guys that don't want to talk to the storage teams. And in some respects, I think the CIO's challenge and the CTO's challenge in those companies is really trying to break down that, those silos to the point where they realize that there shouldn't be those religious discussions about the technology, and that we can just use the technology for what actually does us any good.
So when the storage guy says, I need to use Ethernet now for as my high-speed network, you know, for storage, it shouldn't be a big deal.
Right.
They're more concerned usually that that means they got to deal with the networking team, whereas they didn't before with Fibre Channel, I guess. So
So if anybody wants to go and look at your technology and find out more, where's the best place for them to go?
www.paviliondata.com.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, great discussion. Thanks for your time, Jeff. Well, appreciate
it. Thanks very much, Chris.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Catch up soon.
Look forward to it.